Hello and welcome to episode 35 of the Book Wars Pod. I am joined, as always, by Kate and Kristen. As Kate's shaking her head.
Well, Miranda had to step up last time.
That's true.
Because you were busy stirring your clothes that you were dying for your cosplay.
That's true. Extra special thank you to forever friend of the pod at Real Baby Bird, Miranda, for filling in for me with Kristen from Portland. And doing a great show, so thank you so much, Real Baby Bird.
She did so great. She said such smart things.
That was so great.
So today we're going to be finishing up the reading portion of Lost Stars. We're going to be discussing chapter 22 through the end of the book, which time-wise roughly covers, I don't know, between the time between Empire and Return of the Jedi, or I guess very beginning of Return of the Jedi, to end of the Battle of Jakku.
It's post-cave sex.
Post-cave sex, exactly.
Post-cave sex, yes. Until Battlefront stuff.
Yeah, well, it's concurrent to Battlefront, so it actually ends right where the initial Battlefront campaign ends.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant, but thank you for using the correct words. I appreciate you.
Here for you.
Oh, my God. Oh, and before we start with the lovely fun banter and screaming, just wanted to say, so we are recording this on January 23rd, and fortunately, we all got the news today that Ursula K. Le Guin died. She was super old, but she wrote a huge number of sci-fi and fantasy novels, including The Wizard of Earthsea, which is really, really famous, and I just wanted to mention her because being a woman writer in sci-fi, especially back in the day when she started, was no small feat, and a lot of her work is super foundational for all of the fantasy and sci-fi that we're seeing today, and no doubt has an effect on the folks who are doing Star Wars right now. So just wanted to say that, and yeah, people are important. Listen to women.
Rip in peace, as Keeks would say.
God damn it.
I'm the worst. Ruined. I'm the worst. You guys aren't drinking, right? Because you're dead.
Well, I was going to say, what are we pouring a little out of for Ursula K. Le Guin? Oh,
good one. Aww. You guys start, because you guys aren't drinking, right?
Kate is sick, and I am desperately trying to avoid becoming sick. So I am drinking a raspberry lime giant brand seltzer water.
Ooh, yum. Raspberry lime, that sounds delicious.
It's pretty good. It's no brand name LaCroix, but gets the job done.
Good God.
Kate, are you drinking tea?
Yeah, I have tea right now, in between slamming Tylenol, because while the doctor told me I don't have the fucking flu, I sure feel like it, so here we are.
Yeah,
at least you're not gonna die.
That flu test will only test for one strain of the flu, though, so I don't believe it. Just like the flu shot only protects you from, like, a certain...
No, the flu shot protects you from more than one strain.
I said a certain couple.
Oh, okay.
They pick, like, the top two.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway.
Chris, take bio.
Yep.
Anyway, Chris knows way more bio than me. I'm a dum-dum.
I doubt that.
No, that's absolutely false. Chris does not know any bio.
Great. neither do I. I didn't even know, but this week, I didn't know you guys weren't going to be drinking, but this is my most extra beer week, so far on the Book Wars Pod in 35 episodes. Ooh. So I am drinking from Fort George, unsurprisingly. They are doing kind of, an evolving series. That is using kind of like similar recipes, but some different hops and things. So if you actually go to fortgeorgebrewery.com/gone, you can see all of the different variations. So I'm actually drinking the second variation of, what they're calling is the Fields of Green IPA. So I'm drinking the second variation, which is codename Brutus. So they're just doing them in alphabetical order. First one was codename Abigail. This one's codename Brutus. It's Citra and Azaka hops. It has all the malts listed on there if you're interested in that. And it is super hoppy and dank and was canned on 1/8. I think it comes in at 7.6, so it's a big boy. And I'm drinking a tall boy of that, and it actually comes in a color changing can, so the cans are staying the same, but it's like, you know, like on the Coors Light cans when it's cold, the mountains turn blue.
Well, sure, because how else could you tell it's cold?
I know.
Okay, that is stupid as fuck on the Coors Light cans, but on yours that sounds really, really awesome.
It is pretty cool. So they have, as always, they have some pretty cool artwork on there. But it's some it's some like swirlies and stuff. I took a photo of it. I have to take an after photo because I took a before cold photo, and then as soon as I drink all of it, it'll just change colors to different swirly colors. So anyway, that's my extra ass fucking beer of the week.
That's fucking delightful.
I love it.
But Miranda was in town, so we got a 4-pack of that, and we each had one of those, and now I get to have another one. So
yay!
It is extra as fuck, and it is codename Brutus.
That's delightful.
Yeah, it's so good.
That's great.
Kristen, when you send me these pictures, remind me what the brewery name is, and I'll start tagging them on Insta.
Oh, cool. Definitely. Yeah, Fort George loves that shit. So they're always like talking to me on Twitter when I tag them on Untappd. So,
hey, if you're listening, follow us on Instagram. We're just at Book Wars Pod.
Cool. So should we dive in? I think, as promised last episode, what we're going to start with today is we're talking about trauma and PTSD, all of our favorite things in Star Wars, since there's a lot of blowing up things that make people die in this book specifically.
There sure are. I think, Kate,
a lot of blowing up things that make people die.
I know. Kate, I think you wanted to talk about kind of like the difference in the trauma and the PTSD that we see between the different characters here in Lost Stars.
I did, because, oh no, we have such a wide spread of reactions to horrible things happening to these characters. I think the most obvious place to start is going a little bit back in the book and talking about the destruction of the first Death Star, because, of course, we get Sienna and Thane's reactions to that, and Sienna's really sad because she's like, oh, Jude was on the Death Star when this thing blew up, so that kind of sucks. And, you know, throughout the book, she keeps returning to that. She, you know, when her moral integrity and her oath aren't really enough to sustain her, she just reminds herself, like, these people killed Jude, so that's why I'm fighting. And Thane, of course, is, like, generally horrified by it, but Nash is from Alderaan, and his reaction is not great. Chris, you wanted to say something?
I was just going to say, like, with Sienna, what's interesting to me, though, is that not so much her initial reaction, which is to kind of cling to what she's lost and use that as her justification, which I feel like is very common. That's very much a trope, I think, that we see in literature. But the fact that it failed, really. She didn't really hold on to Jude. It made it, like, it... Her continued loyalty to the Emperor made her dead inside, and then she ended up, like, I wouldn't say that she ended up blaming them for Jude, but her love for Jude was not enough to keep her loving the Empire. Like, does that make sense? I don't know, because she ended up by Jakku, like, essentially suicidal. Like, not actively suicidal, but death by ramming your ship into Jakku sounded like a pretty good deal to her.
Yeah, that is a good point.
I agree. Yeah. Yes. I mean,
I know you have a lot of big Nash feelings, Keeks.
Oh, so many Nash feelings. Well, and my point was, like, on the outline I wrote, lol, didn't Nash also end up dead inside? But I mean, I think
he was undead inside.
Yeah, he was super undead inside, I suppose. But I mean, like, I more meant dead inside, like, morally rotted. Dead in a different way.
I mean, he kind of took that void where his home and his family and his friends and all that were, and just stuffed it full of hatred and crazy.
sure the fuck did. Like, I think the place where I noticed that the most was in the we don't really want to call it a battle when the little X-wing squadron goes to like chill behind like the asteroids or whatever, and then Nash figures out that they're there and they want to go fuck them up, and Sienna's like, obviously I'm supposed to let one of these people live, but nobody knows that. It's yes. just like such a hot fucking mess. And like, she's all worried the whole time that he figured out that she is trying to protect Thane, but it turns out that he just thinks that she's also like crazy fucking evil. It's just this whole fucking thing, man.
Yeah, it gets really, really fucked up. I mean, he's just so single-minded at this point in his just needing to destroy anything that opposes the Empire, because of course when you know, you have nothing left. All he has left is the stability and the structure of the Imperial Navy. And I think that's a thing that's true of a lot of veterans, honestly. I think those are one of those things that, like, when they see horrible things happen out in the field, I think they cling to that structure because, of course, you know, your days are scheduled down to the minute. You know that, you know, what you're doing next. You know what you're going to do the day after that. You know what the routine is. And you know, you hear all these stories about veterans coming home and not being able to adjust to civilian life, and that's one of the big reasons why. And I think you see that a lot of that in Nash.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And one thing I want to add, and we have it a little lower on the outline, but I'm going to bring it up, is that Nash really, really, when it reminded me as I was reading this, particularly I've read it before, but when I was reading it this time, of another Alderaanian who, upon losing their planet, threw themselves into their work, didn't give themselves time to grieve, and clung to what they knew and what they did best. And that, of course, is Princess Leia. Like, in kind of just a sick, twisted version of Leia, because obviously Leia clings to the light, right? But, like, and it's interesting because it ties back into discussions that we've had in our Last Jedi wrap-up episode when we were reading Bloodline about kind of, like, what if Leia was the one who had been a Jedi? I feel like Nash is, like, the worst-case scenario of what Leia could have become personality-wise, and then obviously she would have had force powers to boot, because I feel like they both had very... It's, like, funny. Maybe this is a stereotypical Alderaanian reaction. We'll never really know. But, like, they both, upon losing everything they'd ever known, their entire families, their entire planet, they threw themselves into their work and never gave themselves time to grieve. And I feel like that was very unhealthy for both of them. I mean, we saw in Bloodline and just throughout Star Wars how Leia carries that trauma with her, and Nash very clearly is fucked up. And so, I don't know. It's interesting. That, like, kind of reverse parallel I found really, really interesting. And as Lost Stars was written by by Claudia Gray, the same person who wrote Bloodline, it is fitting that she writes Leia so well, and so she also wrote Nash really well.
And you saying that just makes me think, at some point this year, as yet unscheduled, we're going to read Leia, Princess of Alderaan, again written by Claudia Gray, and I'm interested now to see what we might learn about Alderaanian culture that might make them like this.
Yeah.
Other than they have great wine, right?
Yes.
Great wine. Great turquoise wine.
And bridges.
and bridges. So great bridges.
That was a deep cut. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, that was a two episode. No, nobody remembers more than one episode ago, Kate.
I know.
Speaking of queer bridges,
Kate, do you want to talk a little bit about Thane, since he is kind of like it's funny because we talk about him being a foil, but he's still kind of like the foil opposite in a number of interesting different ways to Nash and Sienna, even though he obviously also had folks that he knew who died on the Death Star.
Right, exactly. I mean, the way that we see Nash and Sienna just diving right into their work and keeping their heads down and trying not to think about all these atrocities that they've witnessed, Thane, the only option is to defect. Even if he hasn't yet decided to join the Rebel Alliance, he knows he has to get out of there. And he's so... Again, it's kind of single-minded in this belief that we have that whole part where Thane and Sienna are talking to each other after he defects, and he thinks that Sienna's coming with him, and they just keep, you know, misreading each other, and it just goes to show, you know, how different their personalities are and their reactions to grief, also made me want to scream, but you know, whatever.
Oh my god, that was just the most infuriating. I just wanted to throw the book at the wall. And during the Thane Sienna, oh he's going to stay in the service. She's going to leave with me.
Oh my god. I was just like, I saw it coming, and then I wanted to lie on the floor and just scream. But
I think I was home with Miranda at Real Baby Bird when she was reading that.
Oh my god.
And I think she like verbally said out loud, "Oh no. Oh no. Oh no." Which is like very on brand for her.
Yes.
But I was I know exactly what I know exactly what part she's reading.
Uh-huh. Oh my gosh. But it's also kind of important to note that Thane doesn't leave immediately after Alderaan or even the destruction of the Death Star. He hangs out a little bit and he sees some more horrible fuck shit happening, which, Keeks, I know you wanted to touch on.
I did. I mean, we talked about it a little bit last episode. We actually talked about it a fair bit last episode, but so we know that the slavery that Thane saw on Karev Doi was part of what really ended up kind of being the straw that broke the camel's back. But I kind of like wanted to pose the question like to our listeners and to you guys as well. Was that really like the first instance of bullying? I mean, I think that was like the first instance of like right in your face, person on person. And he saw that nobody was going to be able to help. So that really resonated with him, like from his childhood, obviously, with all this trauma with his dad. Which obviously he didn't really deal with either, which is a whole other interesting wrinkle. So I think that's probably why that specific thing is what drove him to leave when he did. But, I mean, my question was really, like, did you think that there were other instances of, like, fucked up shit that you were surprised didn't drive him away in retrospect? I mean, the number one thing that comes to mind is, like, when he figures out that the training academy is, like, the one that fucked everything up between him and Sienna. Like, I was surprised that that didn't, you know, he seemed so set in his, understanding that it was actually the training academy or whatever. I don't remember what the like subset of that was, but that snipped the wires in his improvised like blaster thingy. Looking back, that's kind of like when we started to hear like those seeds of doubt and like the seeds of really seeing that things were fucked up.
Right. It was interesting for me, definitely, seeing him feel so skeptical about the chain of command and the structure of the Imperial Navy and how much it was driven by favoritism, you know, class differences and all that sort of thing. And then for him to get to Alderaan and, again, already have that doubt within him that Sienna just doesn't have, I think that was a moment where I was kind of like, what? Why? But to go back to your point about slavery and him being in direct contact with that and that being ultimately what causes him to defect, I think what you were saying about him just having that really viscerally in your face, I think that had something huge to do with it. But also, and I talked a little bit about this on the last episode, but I think part of it is that Thane at that point realizes that he is part of this machine and it is also his fault. Again, because he's flying those patrols over the farms and over the planet, and that's what's terrorizing everybody, and that's why they're kept in this state of fear and under the Empire's thumb. He realizes that he, you know, is directly responsible for what is going on in a lot of humongous ways.
Yeah, and he's the bully. He's what he hated. Like, even more than being the Empire and the Empire's evil, he's the bully. And that's, I think, what he's just unable, like, that's the last straw. That's what he's just incapable of accepting.
Exactly.
Yeah, I thought that was the case. I just wanted to check with you guys to see whether or not there was a... I feel like I read this book now like a million years ago. So I'm like, are there other things I'm forgetting?
No, no, totally.
I forget everything's names.
No, dude, you're spot on.
Yeah, and to your point, Kristen, about like how long it took and how there were like all these different straws that added on to the burden, I will talk a little bit more about the pacing of this book in the wrap-up episode, I think. But very much like Bloodline, Claudia Gray is just a master of pacing, and like it was like hanging you on the edge because you saw it coming with Thane, but like it still took like half the book to get there. And even though the book itself just really moves and rushes through everything in a great way, but it was a lot of fun.
I can't wait to talk about pacing. I'm very excited. Oh, I think yes. That's the only thing that I've added to the outline.
Hey. It's quality over quantity with you.
Okay. Hey, I put things on the outline. I read it and I added things to it today.
It's a first. Chris,
yeah, that's how you know that this episode's just it's off brand for us. It's not going to be good. We should really just give up now.
I was going to say it all started downhill before we even started recording.
I'm sick. Yay.
Oh Lord.
So Chris, you missed our discussion about Kanan, and of course like anything in Star Wars, we can draw parallels between characters and, you know, to blow in the face, but I know you wanted to jump in and talk a little bit more about those parallels and stuff.
I did, especially because I was the one who put the comparing Thane and Kanan point on the outline last week, and Kanan I didn't get to talk about it.
Kanan has a stupid hair.
Kanan and his stupid hair. God. I mean, Thane's hair could be stupid, too.
No, it's not. I've seen
it's the luscious, guy. I know. It's
I've
luscious.
I've seen the guy that Claudia Gray based Thane on, and I'm just like, oh, I would climb that man like a tree.
All right, so we're gonna break Thane and Sienna up and take them for ourselves, is what you're telling me.
No.
Thane is dating Santa.
But anyway, just like there were a lot of, I mean, I feel like this Star Wars, there's always parallels between characters, right? So like obviously we talked about Nash and Leia in the kind of fucked up way. And Kristen, I know you came up with a really interesting one.
It was a great point about a character whose name she couldn't remember for the longest time, even though he's super fucking important.
Of course he's important. And like, I remembered his name when we were talking about him in the Bloodline episode. I mean, not in the, oh my God, in the Battlefront 2 episodes.
Oh my God. There's
Battlefront 2 : what's the rest of that book title?
Inferno Squad.
He's part of that.
He sure is, Kristen. He sure is. Oh my God.
Anyway, I thought, I also called him today on Twitter, and also in this outline, I called him Gideon Hask, super problematic frat bro, because that's exactly what he is.
Correct.
But, I mean, I think we can draw parallels between him and Nash, because they're both like so fucking crazy by the time. It's interesting with Gideon because he's kind of like that the whole time almost. We don't know it when we're reading it, but by the end he's like, look what I made for you. I killed all of these people.
Yay!
Like, it's like when a dog brings back like a dead chicken, you're like, oh no. He doesn't know.
Whose chicken is this?
Thank you, sweet baby, but no, bad. anyway, but at the end of the Battlefront 2 campaign, which you referenced earlier, right, Chris? He wants to kill Iden. Like, that's like literally,
yes,
the entire point of one of the like little tasks that you have to do. And we'll talk more about Battlefront 2 at a later date.
Yes. The little tasks. Shoot that bastard out of the sky. I'm going to put so many spoiler warnings on this because we haven't talked about the video game yet, but it's good.
I know, but I feel like it's been out long enough that
most people
have at least gotten to that. So yes. if I've gotten to that, and I don't know how to do things.
I got stuck in a corner in that game, and like people are just gunning me down, and I just like had to redo that like 12 times. Anyway.
Yeah, we'll talk about it because I'm so bad at video games, but I played it anyway. For the pod, but I think he opens up a can of worms that here kind of like Nash, we see like a continuation of. I kind of was thinking about it as like different reactions in Star Wars to being betrayed, because like I think in a huge way Nash was betrayed, even though he was on the side of the Empire, he felt super betrayed. Because they destroyed his homeland, his home planet, right? Whereas, like, there's all kinds of that. You know, you have Leia giving up what she calls the rebel base, and then you have them blowing up Alderaan anyway, because I mean, I don't really think she trusted anybody, but I think she was hoping they would not destroy Alderaan.
Please just like don't. We all were. Mm-hmm. Please don't do that.
But I mean, I think this wasn't a fully formed thought, but I did just want to kind of throw that out there because I think that's going to be a continuing theme, especially as we get into other stuff, namely Phasma, right? We know Phasma gets betrayed by FN2187. And I would love for that to be like one of the things that we continue to explore as we do with trauma. So betrayal is a really interesting thing in Star Wars.
It absolutely is. And I'm kind of shocked that we haven't talked about it before because it really is just a really rich and as you said, like just like super, super recurring theme just throughout the series. I also just wanted to add on in terms of Nash and his feelings of betrayal. When he goes out to pick off the little X-Wing recon group, when he finds out that Thane is alive and he's been basically, he faked his own death and Nash has thought that he's dead this entire time and just, you know, just piling grief upon grief for him. And then he finds out he's alive and not only that, to add insult to injury, is a member of the Rebellion, he loses his shit. He loses his shit.
And, oh, I mean, and immediately, too.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, Gideon,
I think that was more of what I was getting at, so thank you. Because I, for some reason, could not come up with that just now. I think it's because I had a chicken cheese steak earlier, but keep going.
And
very full.
Yes. And, I mean, we'll talk about Battlefront the video game at some point, but we see that same thing happen with Hask when, you know, Iden and Del defect because they'd rather actually save civilians than just fucking leave them on this horrible planet that is about to die. And, like, again, loses his shit and, you know, Iden has to shoot him to get away because otherwise, like, he would have totally fucking killed her right then and there.
Yeah, totally. It's the just the speed, like, the complete lack of even, like, indecision. Just the immediate going from you're dead to I'm going to kill you myself was shocking to me, and I think just shows how far he's come.
He needs space therapy.
Clearly, everybody needs space therapy.
And also just like, it's so funny because Sienna, who is very smart and very technically minded, was like, there is no fucking way that Nash doesn't know that I'm trying to protect Thane. And we look at just like how single track minded. I mean, I don't know. We know some stuff about Nash and how smart he is because he was good in the academy. But you would think that he would pick up on some of that, but it doesn't even cross his mind that anybody would ever like be doubting in the Empire, right? I think is part of it. He does not suspect Sienna at all of blocking him from killing Nash. I mean, from killing Thane. Fuck, sorry.
Yes.
I knew I was going to do that at least once.
I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. There are a lot of people just walking around with blinders in this book, and it drives me fucking bonkers, but whatever. Well, like, I mean, in a great way, but
AF.
Well, but, I mean, like, he also wants to bone Sienna.
What war is.
Yes.
Well, yeah, that's fair.
He did also want to bone
Speaking
Sienna.
Of blinders.
That was not creepy or gross at all, BT dubs.
Right.
No, she like the book was just like, and her room was at the end of a long hallway, and Nash was following her, and I was just like, no, no, no.
I can't take a rape scene in a Star Wars book.
Oh my god, stop.
God.
That's what I'm saying.
Alright, anyway, moving past that. One last comparison that I thought was really interesting is we compared Thane to Kanan last episode. Definitely I think you can make a Del comparison to him as well. A Del Miko comparison again from Battlefront. Because in Del you have somebody who truly believes in the Empire, and that's, I guess, not so much Thane, but somebody who thinks that this structure can be used to do good. And that's kind of what Thane is there for, at least in the beginning. But they both leave when they see that the Empire is not what they've been brought up to think that it is, when they see that it's actively hurting people. And for Del, it's on Vardos when it is actively leaving the Vardosians to die. For Thane, obviously, it's when he sees the I cannot think of the alien race.
It's like Bodachi or something.
Yeah, the Bodachi being enslaved. But there's kind of that same breaking point, and then they both, of course, turn to the Rebellion. And so that's another It's definitely not as cut and dry as Kanan versus Thane or Nash versus Leia or Nash versus Hask, but it's definitely there.
Totally. Totally. Oh, Del, what's seven roll? We need to figure out when we're talking about this video game, because I've been ready.
Anyway. Yeah, and I wanted to replay the campaign on, like, not actual child training wheels.
Have you played the DLC yet?
No.
Bro.
Of course I haven't.
All right.
I haven't played PlayStation in weeks.
It's all Quinda.
It's not because he doesn't share. It's because I'm always doing other stuff.
Yeah, okay. Fine.
He just said, as he's playing Madden, he goes, hey. Yes. Quinn's a good share. I'm not worried about it. But speaking of interesting comparisons, to use two of my most used transitions.
Yes.
We see Jellocan get real, real fucked up in this book. And I think it reminded us a lot of Lothal on Rebels, especially with this past season. And so we have our Rebels expert here on the pod, resident Rebels expert, Kate.
It's me, guys.
Now we turn to our senior Rebels senior Kanera correspondent.
Thanks, guys. Oh, God, I hate Kanan's hair. Anyway, sorry.
If you couldn't tell, the trailer came out this week, right before we recorded this.
Last week, but yeah.
Oh. Well, we haven't recorded one since then.
It's true. And I've only, you know, rewatched the trailer about 30 times. Anyway.
Also, it wasn't last week. It was Monday. Today's Tuesday.
No, it was last Friday.
It was Friday.
Was it last Friday?
Yeah, sure was. Fuck.
Oh, well, I didn't watch it then. I watched it on Monday.
Yeah, I know. Great.
Keep going.
Because I was like, did you watch it? And you're like, no, I'm going to cry. Exactly like that.
Thank you, guys. Voice. Over text. Yes. I recorded it so she could hear it.
Correct. So we get a lot of descriptions of space and place in this book, especially of Jellocan, which is, of course, this really mountainous planet that is not necessarily welcoming in terms of its feeling. You know, it's not. When you think about places like Alderaan or Naboo, they have a lot of natural beauty that's immediately apparent. Jellocan is kind of more like a stark place, but it's steeped in tradition.
Like the north?
Kind of. What?
It's a stark place.
Oh my God.
Chris, that was so bad, but also like you're not wrong.
Not Game of Thrones pod. Like,
oh my God.
Thrones Wars pod.
You know what?
Thrones Wars.
Listen, we would never be doing Game of Thrones pod because that man's never gonna finish those books. Anyway.
Accurate.
It's okay, we didn't let George Lucas finish either.
Oh.
Oh shit!
Jesus.
Damn! Fuck! All right!
And both franchises are probably better for it.
What's the problem?
Did you guys forget the prequels? How could we? Any fucking way! So, but yeah, we get a lot of information about Jellocan and its, you know, its geography and what it's good for is mining, because the Empire. And then, of course, when Thane and Sienna return later as adults, Thane comes back, of course, after he defects, and then Sienna comes back even years later than that to attend her mother's trial, and they both pay a whole lot of attention to how the populace is faring after the Empire takes over and decides to just strip mine the entire place. And how the environment is doing as well. You know, there's a lot of pollution and there's just this utter breakdown in culture. We were talking, I think it was probably the first episode that we did on Lost Stars, about how there are really two classes of people on Jellocan, and it's immediately apparent, at least in the beginning, who belongs to which. And that's just not a thing anymore. You know, people are all wearing the same clothes. There's a huge migrant population. They are living in fucking like shanties and stuff like that. And basically, it's another kind of genocide for the Empire. They kill planets, they kill cultures, they kill entire populations. And we see that visually really, really starkly on Star Wars Rebels, especially in this fourth season, where they finally return to Lothal. And we know what Lothal looks like because at the beginning, because we see it from space as the Ghost crew is running their missions. But, you know, and it's not like it was great back then, because already people were living in these just impermanent communities, these, oh my God, what is it? Like, basically refugees camps, like Tarkin Town. But
now, oh my God.
Yeah. Fucking Tarkin Town. And yeah, but they're returning to Lothal, and you can see from space, it looks fucking terrible. Like, it looks, Ezra says, it looks like it's dead. And yeah, I just immediately drew that comparison. Also, extremely prescient right now, because yay, climate change. It is 60 fucking degrees in DC in January, and I am afraid.
That took a turn.
Sure did.
Anyway, speaking of destruction of planets, I think we wanted to talk also about reconstruction, basically, rebuilding after the Galactic Civil War.
I sure did. Yeah, like, this is something that we haven't gotten as much of a view of. Obviously, when we read Aftermath, we're going to get a whole big view of it. But this is kind of the first time we've delved into galactic reconstruction, as you phrased it just then. Like, we you know, we talked a little bit about it in flashbacks and Bloodline, of how the New Republic was set up and everything, but we haven't really gotten the individual view. And in that way, Thane and Sienna are definitely stand-ins for the whole galaxy, I think, because you've got the two different sides, right? You've got Thane, who is, by the end of the war, a member of the Rebellion, and he's somebody who fought the Empire, fought at Jakku, and is just trying to make his way in the new world, and is actually, like, pretty pleased with it. But then on the other side, you have the Imperial holdouts, and, like, obviously, they lose at Jakku, but in terms of individual citizens, there were definitely a lot of people and a lot of systems that were still loyal to the Empire. And it's just interesting to see kind of Sienna's, the fact that she's, like, kind of dead inside, like we were talking about. There's probably entire planets just feeling like that, because they don't know how to think. They still think the rebels are terrorists, but it's also the writing's on the wall that the rebels are going to win, and nobody really knows what to do.
Right, and I think it's really telling. It was so heartbreaking at the end in the last chapter where Thane goes to visit Sienna in prison, and she fully expects to just be put on trial by the rebels and be punished horribly, if not executed, because that's all she knows after being in the Empire and, you know, hearing about and or witnessing countless people get tortured or, you know, just strangled, force choked by Darth Vader, you know, casual things like that.
Yeah, it's just interesting to see, particularly for Sienna, I think is the more interesting case study here, just because the losing side, obviously, it's a larger upheaval. But I keep coming back to the quote from Thane, "The Empire hasn't kept faith with us." And just how difficult it must be to accept that. And, like, and honestly, why I think it's kind of a good view into why people were so, some people were so willing to accept the First Order, and why there were centrists and centrist worlds in, you know, Bloodline and in the New Republic. Because you have these people who, the Empire was working for them, and so it wasn't a big problem. And so when this foundation is ripped out from under you so quickly, and you don't really have time for it to break down naturally, and you don't really have time to grieve it before the New Republic is set up, I do feel like Sienna's just extreme emotional whiplash and, like, wanting to die, essentially, I think it's important to note and important to think about as we try and look at the state of the galaxy at the end of the Civil War.
Right. I would really love some sort of examination of Sienna's basically reabsorption into this new world order, or, you know, I guess a better version of the old Republic, or at least they tried.
Are we getting a sequel to this at some point?
No.
Nothing's.
No.
I don't think we have any reason to think we are.
Yeah. But also.
But I mean, the other side of that coin is that there's no necessary reason to think we aren't.
Right. I mean,
Claudia, give us a sequel.
I know. I think a lot of people think that we wouldn't get a sequel until at least after the sequel trilogy of movies is done, because that's about when things would be happening. Like, if we don't know certain things about the rise of the First Order, etc., then, yeah. Oh, I found my point, guys. Okay, great. Anyway, just adjustment, basically, to the New Republic. And it just, I make a lot of comparisons to Nazi Germany, but, like, honestly, you know, it's just kind of like, after the fall of the Third Reich, and, like, basically all of Germany was a member of the Nazi Party, and if not, like, actively approved of what was going on, then tacitly did. And, you know, it's the whole bystander effect sort of thing. And then they just had to go and be like, oh, we lost the war. We don't hate Jews. Boo, Hitler.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
What?
For more fascism and communism, please visit last episode. And I had the last point on here, but I think it might be better saved for the wrap-up, since we've ended on such a high note of genocide. Fuck us always.
One thing I would love to just add on to your point, Kate, is obviously we have not read Aftermath, and it's going to be a while before we get to Empire's End. But Empire's End ends with essentially most of the books, the Battle of Jakku. And I would
Spoilers. No, I'm kidding.
I would love to essentially get a look at the Reconstruction phase, at the post-Civil War phase. And I mean, like, also the post-American Civil War, where you have forced, you know, military enforcement of Reconstruction in the South. And I want to know, I want to know, did the New Republic need to station Starhawks above Imperial worlds for a while? Like, did they need to come as conquerors, and did that contribute to the rise of the centrists? Or after, you know, Jakku, and after the Empire kind of did reach that point where it was falling apart, did people eventually fall in line and fall in line with the New Republic? And so that's a story that I would love to read.
Del Rey, give us a book, guys.
Or a series.
Yes.
Man, you guys have, like, such lofty things that you want to know. I just want to know if Sienna is Snoke.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, that point gave me cancer.
That was for you, Kate.
Fuck you. Fuck you.
Well, I don't think there's any better place that we could possibly end it, so I think we're just going to wrap up here. Thank you, as always, for listening to episode 35 of the Book Wars Pod. Next week, we're actually going to have a two-episode week coming up for you. We're going to be wrapping up Lost Stars by Claudia Gray. But as part of that, we're going to be having a very special interview about Lost Stars and about YA in general and kind of the landscape of YA with Poppy Ashwright, who is a YA author and enthusiast, and we're super excited about it.
Yes. And co-host of the Parabatai Pod, which you should all look up on Twitter if you are at all interested in the Shadowhunter series of books by Cassandra Clare or the Shadowhunters TV show on Freeform.
Absolutely. So, and we're going to be talking much more about that next week with Poppy. So in the meantime, thank you for listening. Hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr. All those are at Book Wars Pod. Our email, of course, is bookwarspod@gmail.com.
Oh, and I just wanted to throw in, for those of you who like to plan ahead, we will be reading Phasma next by Delilah S. Dawson.
So yes.
Grab that at your library or whatever.
Yes, that is an excellent point. Thank you for it. You're Phasma welcome. By Delilah S. Dawson coming up next.
You're so fucking
welcome. I actually started it already, which is an actual miracle.
That is an... I'm so proud of you. You get a gold star today.
Right.
Listen, I'm just trying, and I want to know what we're reading after, because maybe I'll read all of it while I'm in Denmark, because I'm planning on just sitting in my expensive hotel room that I'm not paying for the whole time I'm there.
There you go.
Nice. And also, one more little bit of foreshadowing. We have, I think, a very exciting announcement coming up next week, so we hope that you'll tune in with some news about the future of the show, and we certainly feel it's good news, so we'll leave it there.
Yes.
Anyway, rate, review, and subscribe to the Book Wars Pod on iTunes, on Google Play, on Stitcher, on Spotify. We need more ratings and reviews to help people discover the show. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Design. Thank you so much for listening to episode 35 of the Book Wars Pod. For Kate and Kristen, I'm Chris, and we will talk to you next week.
Bitch, I'm awesome.
Bitch, you are awesome.